December 21st, 1979. I walked into the mess hall just after midnight, hungry, even though the main course smelled like microwaved cardboard. Dupree was already there, sitting at a table by herself. Kadar and Anderson were at a corner table, conversing quietly over coffee. They were now a work team, but they seemed to be everywhere together recently. I could feel the tension and excitement within the space, shared it without reserve. Another icicle was scheduled to go into orbit today, our fifth since the accident. Just three more to go. 4 weeks on the moon had changed more than my attitude. My gait was steadier, more sure-footed. And the dark beyond the walls didn't bother me as much as when I first arrived. I ambled to the buffet and picked up a tray. Meatloaf, instant potatoes, what appeared to be green beans. They looked wilted. SSDD. I was even getting tired of Dupree's garden goods. I loaded my tray, turned and nodded at Kadar, then settled in across from Dupree, who had her nose buried in a book. As I sat down, Kadar said something to Anderson I couldn't make out. Then he got up and left, leaving his cup on the table. Anderson stood, took both cups to the dirties tray, and then drew a fresh cup of coffee. He walked to our table.
"Hey, mind if I sit down?"
Dupree looked up long enough to grunt. I gestured at an empty chair. He sat and sipped his coffee. I tipped my head to the door Kadar had just exited. "You two get off shift early?"
"Nah," Anderson said. "Posey moved us to your shift. I gotta suit up in a few minutes. Icicle launch at 06:30. You know, I'm helping with the final plumbing checkout."
It was the most he'd said to me in 4 weeks.
"You settled in okay?" "Yeah. Amazing how quick being tired all the time takes away the wonder of walking on the moon."
He sipped his coffee.
"Imagine how Jake feels."
Dupree set her book aside. "He counts the hours he's been here."
"Yeah," I said.
Anderson sat back and took another sip.
"Poor guy don't talk about anything except getting off this rock. I'm amazed he hasn't gone walkabout by now."
"Kadar's tough," Dupree said. I nodded. "I grew up around anthracite miners. They bitch and moan and talk the ear off their union rep, but there's a pride in those guys. They ride on their backs into a hole a mile inside a mountain, and no damn few could take it." I forced down another mouthful of string beans, waiting.
"Uh-huh," Anderson said. "He jabbers our shift away, going on about how we need to form a union. Show solidarity."
I pushed at the potatoes with my fork, decided against it. There were limits.
"Yeah, we could just put down our tools and strike, but what good would that do?" Dupree said.
"If we make this ship miss its tick, we'd lose the goodwill of the whole damned country. You'd have to be really desperate to try something like that." Anderson glanced at her.
"What's the line in Bobby McGee? You know, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose."
"Nothing, not nothing." He drained his cup and stood up.
"Whatever. I got to take a leak and get out there, or Posey will be down my throat so far she'll see daylight out my butt."
December 25th, 1979. "Merry Christmas, Tom." The bright dot rose over the rim wall, farther to the east after the final adjustment to the orbital plane.
"Copy that, Laura. Have any presents for me?"
Garver was in a good mood. 6 more days to launch and only 1 more icicle to be sent up. He would make his schedule.
"Work on the final piece of ice is underway," I said, "and there's time to do another if there's a failure." "Music to my ears," Garver said. "You've more than earned your prize. I'll have you up here the day after launch and on your way to Earth shortly after that."
"Uh-huh."
"You don't sound excited," he said.
"I am. It's just..."
"You haven't caught your man." Yes, that's it.
It doesn't matter, Laura, Garver said.
Yes, it does. He changed the subject.
I've heard from Earth. Plans for the second Mars flight have been finalized. Construction will begin in 90 days. Launch in 26 months.
He was getting excited.
It's supposed to be faster. Cut 2 months off the trip. The outbound leg will use hydrogen as a working fluid, bump engine efficiency to allow a bigger payload, including a lander this time. They're going to hold a contest to name it.
As long as it isn't Thumper, will you build it?
Garver cleared his throat. They want a younger man next time.
What will you do?
I'm thinking about that.
He cleared his throat again.
You see the pickup from the telephoto camera we mounted for the launch?
I did. Selene Station was 5 miles from Odyssey in a following orbit. At a magnification of 60, the spacecraft appeared to be less than 500 feet away. The orbital burn would be relayed live to Earth.
It looks good, I said.
But I'll be with most of the crew in the bubble, watching naked eye. Watching the crew as well.
No need.
The ship hasn't launched yet, Tom. What did you find out about a rocket launch from down here?
There's no danger.
Are you sure?
Damn it, there's no danger. This conversation's over.
I stood, listening to static. He'd hung up on me. December 31st, 1979. Posey entered the west entrance locker room just as I lifted my helmet into place.
Need some help? She asked.
Sure, I said. They claimed in training the suits are designed so a single person can dress herself. But I always struggle. It's easier when you have a second pair of hands. Posey shrugged.
Everything's easier if you don't have to do it by yourself. That's the manager's motto.
She stepped to a locker that held one of her 4 matching flower power painted suits. She kept one at each airlock, along with a few plain white spares.
Help me get into my suit first, she said.
For a time, we worked in silence, checking each other's suit.
Going out to watch the show? I asked, as I slipped my head up into the helmet Zender held. Yes.
The big fireworks display laid out at North Rim would be set off in less than 2 hours to mark the midnight launch of Odyssey. The first second of the first day of a new decade, to be forever celebrated as the moment Americans took their next step to the stars. Except for those nerds who insisted the decade would begin at 1981. At least, that was the corporate line all the network news services pushed. For the men and women at Rockefeller Base, it marked a day more personal and important. 24 hours away from work and a chance to party. Posey made a big deal out of it when she made the announcement at a mandatory meeting 3 days before.
This is happening because of us, she had said.
Sure, Dupree had hissed in my ear. And next day we'll all be back to work, good little drones picking that cotton.
Did you hear me? Posey asked.
Her voice had taken on the hollow, mechanical sound of the suit radios.
Sorry, I said. Interference. What did you say? I said I wouldn't miss it. How about you? Why aren't you already out there? Miss the trolley?
No, I figured to watch it on the television in the lounge, but the reception's not very good. It was a lie. I had planned all along to be close to the fireworks site, but wanted to stop by the spot where I had hidden the case Garver gave to me. If I had to stop a last-minute assault, I would need a weapon, and there was a gun in the case.
There's still plenty of time, Posey said.
How's that? I asked. Posey tipped her helmet toward the glowing clock above the door. I looked, despite having a heads-up time display in my own helmet. 22:40.
We'll take one of the loaders. One of the perks being boss, traveling in comfort.
This can't be right, I said. My heads-up says I've only got a quarter tank of oxygen. I know I topped the tank when I came back in last work shift. Posey examined the gauges on the back of my life support pack.
I've got the same reading here. Everything looks okay, you must have forgotten.
No, that's not possible. I've got to charge it.
No time, Posey said. Do it at the bubble. There's spare tanks there, and it's only a 15-minute ride.
I don't like doing that, I said.
She set her own helmet into place.
Up to you, but if you want a ride...
Can I catch a ride, too? I turned toward the corridor entrance. The noises of the suits, the sounds of our voices, and the worry over the low oxygen had masked Dupree's entrance.
I don't think, Posey said.
Dupree already stood at her locker. She pulled her suit out and held it out to me.
Help me with this, will you? She asked.
There may not be room, Posey said. I glanced at Posey. She looked like she had sucked on a lemon.
Come on, Posey, Dupree said as she scrambled into her pressure suit. Don't be a bitch. I won't take up that much room. We'll be fine.
At last, Posey nodded. She scooped up her gear bag. All right, she said. Hurry. I don't want to be late.
We rolled along the crater floor at 6 miles per hour, following the twin circles of light from the headlamps. Not exactly racing speeds, but twice as fast as we would have managed walking in the bulky pressure suits, and the rover's electric motors could keep up that speed for hours. Dupree drove, at Posey's suggestion. I sat next to her, and Posey stood behind us, gripping the seat backs. I couldn't hear so much as a whine from the vehicle, but felt the steady vibrations from the big electric motors that drove each of the 6 drive wheels.
I need to make a stop, I said.
For what?
Posey's voice sounded more authoritative on the suit's radio, deeper and richer.
Something for the party. It's around to the left.
Hope it's something good.
I heard the amusement and disdain in Posey's voice. She probably thinks we're going to the still.
Over at the far end, I said, pointing. Back by the west corner. I'll tell you when we get close.
Dupree turned the vehicle and accelerated. On foot, the cache lay 8 minutes from the west lock. We covered the distance in just under 4.
Stop here, I said.
I clambered from the rover when it stopped. I'd done a good job on the cache, set it near a concrete piling so it looked as if it were a piece of the superstructure. The tricky part was kneeling in the pressure suit. I eased into place, went to one knee, and tapped in the 4-digit locking code. When I pulled the box open, the compressed air pistol and the 4 flechette rounds it carried were gone. I glanced toward the loader. Posey and Dupree were deep in conversation, not paying any attention to me or my empty junction box. I locked the lid and loped back to the rover. I thought of growing up in Pikesville, running with my brother toward the family's Ford Country Squire station wagon, racing for the privilege of sitting up front with Dad.
Shotgun, I muttered sourly as I climbed back in next to Dupree.
Dupree engaged the rover's 6 electric motors. The vehicle rolled away from the array. Posey leaned close.
The pantry empty?
Yes.
What happened?
I don't know, I said.
If you hit a bottle there, it would have frozen and exploded. I thought you knew better by now.
Yeah, you nailed it,
I lied.
I couldn't figure it. No one knew about the cache. Had I said something I shouldn't have? Had Jake Kadar or Mitchell Anderson twigged to my investigation in some other way? Somehow I'd miscalculated, revealed my intentions, and led someone to my hiding place. I thought I'd been so careful, though.
Time to change my plans.
Whoever took the flechette gun had to be the one who planned to strike at Odyssey before the Mars ship moved out of range. And he would be waiting for me somewhere, with 4 plastic flechette shells filled with dozens of tiny steel darts. The rover bounced across a rough stretch of floor, a set of rills. I glanced up, uncertain where we were, and saw none of the landmarks I'd learned over the last 5 weeks.
I thought we were headed for the bubble, I said.
I am, Posey said.
You're not.
I turned as much as the pressure suit would allow, trying to look behind me.
Sit still, Posey snapped. Dupree's doing what I told her to do. You need to do that, too. I've got the fancy gun of yours pressed against your friend's left shoulder. What's going on, Posey? I asked. There was a teasing tone to the other woman's voice I'd never heard before. Maybe I'll tell you, she said. Maybe I won't. Sit still for now and shut up. When we stopped, my heads-up display read 2300. An hour left until the fireworks display began. Odyssey was passing over the South Pole, warming up the reactors for the engines. I worried more about the oxygen gauges. I had less than 10 minutes' worth of air left. Something had to be done soon. Get out, Kerrigan, Posey ordered. You can't... I said get out. I clambered from the rover. I felt brief resistance and heard a short, brittle snap. Before I could turn back to the vehicle, I heard a scrambling sound through the headphones that could only be two people struggling in pressure suits. Jesus! Dupree sounded panicked. Jesus, you can't do that! I turned in time to see Posey clawing at Dupree's life support pack. A cloud of white vapor steamed around Dupree's helmet, as if it were a cold day on Earth and she was breathing hard. She twisted and turned beneath Posey, at a disadvantage because of her position. I stepped toward the rover. God damn you, Posey screamed, waving the compressed air gun toward me. Stay where you are. Dupree scrambled across the passenger seat on her belly, wallowing in the heavy suit. She kicked at Posey's hands, fell from the vehicle, catching herself with her gloved hands before her faceplate hit the regolith. She pushed, staggered onto her feet and stumbled toward me, went to her knees an arm's length away. She opened my tanks! Dupree's voice sounded distant and hollow. The bitch opened my tanks! Shut it down, Laura! Shut it down! I reached to the controls, fumbled my first attempt, but then managed to return the valves to the proper position. I glanced at the gauges. Dupree had just a bit more than 50 minutes' worth of air. Dupree to Rockefeller Control. We're low on oxygen, about an hour out to the northwest. Send help stat. We need help now. No response. I glanced at Dupree's suit. The radio antenna had been snapped in half. Posey's handiwork. They're not going to hear you. Posey stood on the passenger seat, the pistol pointed at Dupree and me. There's enough antenna left for up-close communication, but no one beyond a couple hundred yards can hear you. Did you kill Leatherman? I asked. Back away, Posey said. Back away or you die right now. I helped lever Dupree to her feet. Did you kill him? I said back up. The two of us shuffled backward until we were almost 100 feet from the loader. Come on, Posey, I said. Tell me. I want to know before I die. Posey maneuvered into the driver's seat. I didn't mean to. It was an accident, but no one will believe that now. Not after I stuffed him into the ice. Why did you do it? The bastard was coming on to me. Christ. It had been over 2 years since I'd been with a man. And then he used me. I caught him snooping in my employee records. I thought he was a union rep. We argued, and I lost it. I pushed him back and he hit his head on the wall. Freaking newbie couldn't handle the gravity. I got him into a suit and cut the leg to make it look like an accident. And now you're going to kill us. She began to roll away. No. The two of you just went walkabout. It happens a lot up here. We watched her head off toward the observation bubble. Dupree turned to me before the vehicle disappeared. How much air do you have left? She asked. 5, maybe 6 minutes? You? Almost half an hour. Swell, you might be able to make it back to base. Not without you. You know how to do a 2-person emergency air transfer? Yeah, but even if we split what we've got, we don't have enough air to make it to the base in 15 minutes. And if Posey's as smart as I know she is, we can't make it to the bubble in that time either. Let's get started on the transfer. Dupree said. We're pushing the time needed as it is.
I turned to allow Dupree access to my life support pack. But what good?
Dupree interrupted.
You know that illegal still you're always asking me about?
Yeah.
It's no more than 10 minutes hike away, and I've got oxygen tanks there.
Dupree had underestimated the distance to the still. Either that, or I was hyperventilating. My suit's oxygen level indicator had dropped into the red by the time Dupree pointed to a small, rounded mound. A buried sulfur concrete dome.
There it is, Dupree panted. Told you we could make it.
There was no glass door, just the rotating lock. Dupree pointed that I should go first, and it was no time to play Alphonse and Gaston. It still seemed to take forever before we were both inside. We stood face to face, working each other's helmet rings. At last, my seal popped and I could breathe. I finished removing Dupree's helmet and leaned against a rough wall, sucking in breath after breath of oxygen. The dome felt overwarm, and the heady sour mash scent of moonshine filled my nose. The dome wasn't much larger than my quarters at the base habitat. 8 feet in diameter, and filled with Dupree's distillation equipment, it offered barely enough room for the two of us to stand, much less move. The dim light added to the sense of claustrophobia.
Tight quarters, I said.
Yeah, Dupree said.
But we're alive. Come on, there's more room below.
Below? Dupree tipped her head. I spotted a hole in the floor near the far sloping wall. I jockeyed around, twisting so that Dupree could move past me toward it. When Dupree started down the ladder, I followed.
Where did you get this place, Edie?
Lunar Scrimshaw. I got off-hours work in return for a share of the shine. A small storage room lay below, down an obviously homemade ladder. Despite the metal shelves stacked full of supplies, the scavenged plastic barrels, and the life support equipment, there was enough space here to turn around without touching each other. I pointed to the oxygen charging port, marked in vivid green.
Help me charge my suit, will you? I'm going after her.
Dupree didn't move. She studied me for a moment, her mouth set in a hard, straight line.
You're still law, aren't you?
No more lies.
I shrugged.
I wasn't when I came down here 5 weeks ago. I lost my badge back on Earth. This job was the best I could line up.
And now?
Dupree asked.
They offered me my badge back just before I dropped from Celine Station, if I could find out who killed Leatherman.
That's all?
I was supposed to stop the sabotage, too.
And now?
Got the word this morning I had my badge back if I wanted it. I'm going to use it to arrest Zender. Jake Kadar, too, if he's still alive. And I'm going to make sure there's a trial so everybody back on Earth sees what's going on here.
Okay.
Dupree fiddled with the oxygen fittings. I watched the dial as the marker began to move away from the big letter E.
The seconds ticked past.
I watched the oxygen gauge climb toward full. The dome didn't feel so overwarm anymore. I listened to the ticks and hisses of my suit, the creaking of the dome's equipment, and imagined what I might say to my father when this was over, if I was still alive, if I told him I wasn't going to take back the badge.
I thought you killed him, I said after a time.
I figured as much, Dupree said. My old man always said I had that sort of face.
Your father?
Nah, my husband.
You're still married?
Uh-huh.
But you couldn't prove it by that asshole. He went out for milk one night and didn't even send back the change.
I grunted once, almost a laugh.
It's better that everybody knows what's what here.
If you say so. I don't figure it'll make any difference.
Dupree fiddled with the fittings again. I glanced at my heads-up display. My tanks were full.
Help me with mine, Dupree said.
She turned her back to me. I began to set the lines.
When you get back to the base,
Dupree interrupted.
Hell with that, she said. I'm coming with you.
Wouldn't miss this for a ride to Mars.
Down on Earth, a billion people were looking up at the full moon. Gliding up its face from south to north, Odyssey was visible only in the mind's eye, approaching the moment its nuclear engines would ignite over the moon's north pole. The exhaust of the first fireworks rocket limbed a fiery trail across the black void above North Rim. It exploded into an incandescent ball of rich green light that faded into nothingness. "A waste of time and money," Dupree muttered. "No one on Earth will be able to see anything with the naked eye."
"There'll be a lot of people out with telescopes," I said. "And the cameras on Selene Station will pick it up. It's all part of the celebration."
"Part of the propaganda, don't you mean?"
"Lot of good a trip to Mars is going to do us. That senator from Massachusetts, the guy who ran against Nixon, has it right."
"Kennedy?"
"Yeah, that's the guy. He says we ought to be spending the money to do some good at home."
"I suppose."
I hadn't ever really thought much about it while I wore a badge. I'd left the politics to others and focused on my work. For all the good that did me. It had taken us the better part of 20 minutes to hike from Dupree's hidden still to North Rim. The fireworks began on the dot at 2350, just as we crested a small ridge. The vantage offered a spectacular view of the display area, as well as the plain below where the techs bustled about overseeing the detonations. Jake Kadar was down there somewhere. My inclination was to head down into the bustle, figure out which one was Kadar when I got there. Whether or not Garver thought much of the notion of a rocket launch aimed at Odyssey, I was convinced that was what Kadar planned. Even so, Posey most likely waited in the portable bubble set up beyond the fireworks. She was an admitted murderer, premeditated or not. By all the rules, I had to go after her first. Dupree had already started for the bubble. She stopped and turned when she realized I wasn't with her. "You okay?" she asked. Even through the headset, I heard concern. Dupree didn't know about the planned rocket launch, though. Or maybe she did. Just because she wasn't responsible for Leatherman's death didn't mean she wasn't involved in a conspiracy against the Mars ship. "Yeah," I said. "Just fine."
Dupree waved a gloved hand.
"Come on, then. Let's get that bitch."
The fireworks show continued as we hiked across the plain, each shot more intense and colorful, more crowded with launches than the one before. The finale launched just as we reached the bubble. The dome looked like half a giant soap bubble, anchored to a flat expanse of regolith at the edge of the crater rim, 50 feet across and 20 feet high at center. Two doubled sheets of 60-gauge clear polyvinyl chloride formed the structure, one giant bubble within another and separated by a 6-inch airspace. The airlock was sealed within a plastic sleeve. Its walls offered a clear view as wave after wave of rockets climbed into the void, leaving dissolving lines of colored fire behind. Then they blossomed, a fast-fading bouquet of multicolored globes of fiery light. And as the sky turned charcoal black again, a brilliant star rose over the southeastern horizon as Odyssey reached for the zenith, as it had so many times before. About 10 degrees above the rim, the point of light appeared to grow much brighter. 5 minutes from the pole, Odyssey's engines fired, beginning the burn that would break it free from orbit and send it on its way to Mars. Inside the clear bubble, the crowd of suited figures went wild. They might all be cynics, like Dupree, might think the Odyssey a work of hokum, but the sight of that star, that massive vehicle underway, a thing they helped make possible, stirred their souls. The sounds of celebration filled my suit's headset. We were close enough now for reception. I felt a shiver tiptoe up my spine. Only 5 weeks on the job, but I felt the need to cheer. "Go. Go. Go." I helped make that happen.
"There," Dupree breathed, pointing. "There she is."
Sure enough, I spotted Posey's distinctive pressure suit near the center of the clear plastic dome.
Like the others, she had her back to us, to the prefab airlock, looking overhead. Dupree grabbed at my arm, but before she took a single step toward the lock, I glanced down into the maze of metal frames that had supported the launching tubes. The other workers were headed up the rim slope to the bubble, but a single suited figure remained below. A skull and crossbones pattern. Jake Kadar. As I watched, he raised a massive tube to his shoulder and pressed his helmet to a mechanism set at an angle atop the tube. It had to be the aiming sights. The tip of the tube traced ahead of the path of Odyssey across the heavens. Then a gout of fire belched from the rear of the tube, and another rocket streaked into the sky. "Jesus, what was that?" Dupree said. There had been no cloud of dust, of course. The crew had cleared the floor of North Rim down to bare rock, but there still was reaction. Kadar rocked in place, buffeted by the blast, pulled off his feet, but he didn't fall. "He anchored himself in place," I said. The man came prepared. "Is that Kadar?" Dupree asked. The rocket trail stretched toward where Odyssey would be in a few minutes. "Looks that way," I said. "He's shooting at the ship. Let's hope his aim was wrong." I wondered if Garver saw it, from his vantage point on Selene Station, a dimmer star slowly separating from Odyssey. And I wondered if he was still unconcerned. Finally, after what seemed eternity, though it couldn't have been more than a couple of seconds, the exhaust trail snuffed out. I began to count. As I reached 42, a massive ball of white light appeared, more intense, more threatening than anything that had come before. "Did he get his hands on an atom bomb?" I asked. Dupree sounded excited. "That wasn't an A-bomb." "You knew about it?" "No, it wasn't nearly bright enough. You'd have been blind now if it was." "Jake wanted to destroy Odyssey." "I don't believe it. He helped build the damn thing. Why would he want to blow it up? Besides, that bit of pyrotechnics went off at least 30 miles below the ship. Either someone miscalculated, or it was a scare tactic." I looked up again. Odyssey was almost directly overhead. Normally, it would begin to move toward the northern horizon, blinking out as it moved into the moon's shadow. But it was falling slower, and yet slower, as it moved out of orbit, picking up steam. There was a voice on the radio, the ship commander. "All systems nominal." "Damn," I said. Too much was going on at once. Dupree pointed. "Jake's on his way up here now. Bet he wants to turn himself in. Bet he wants to be arrested, get some attention. Somebody's got to talk about conditions here." "I'm not worried about him," I said. "Watching Kadar, I forgot about Posey." Dupree turned toward the dome. Most of the folks inside still watched Odyssey. Some were high-fiving and slapping each other on the back. A happy babble filled my headphones. But Posey Zender, her suit painting unmistakable, stood with her back to the others, her attention riveted on me and Dupree. "Stay out here," I said. "She's got my gun." "To hell with that, I want a piece of her." And Dupree hurried after me toward the lock. The crowd turned as I swept through the airlock. Thick interlocking rubber mats covered the floor. Electric heaters sat at the cardinal compass points. A head-high screen hid the sanitation units. Someone had stenciled a crescent half-moon upon the screen. A portable air generator, identical to the unit in Dupree's distillery, sat near the airlock. Power for the lights and all the equipment fed from a cable leading back to a junction box below the solar arrays near the habitat. Nothing fancy. Still, it was cozy, and the four heaters, along with all the people in the bubble, kept it comfortable. At first glance, the image of a herd of pregnant aliens popped into my head. The gathered technicians and miners still wore pressure suits, but had removed their helmets and clipped them to their suit fronts on quick-release rings. Behind me, the airlock whooshed and the dome's plastic surface rippled as Dupree came in. Posey took a step back and pulled the air pistol from a suit pouch at her hip. "She's got a gun," someone shouted. "Posey's got a gun." The crowd pushed back even more. Those in the outer edges pressed against the flexible walls.
"Fancy seeing you two here," Posey said. "I didn't think you would be by."
"Put down the gun, Posey," someone suggested.
"Where did she get a gun?" someone else asked.
I eased toward Posey.
"If you fire that in here and miss, you'll open up the bubble. A lot of people could die."
"Everyone put on your helmets," Posey said.
"She tried to kill us," Dupree said.
The crowd rumbled even louder. Dupree ignored them, moved forward too, but eased away from me. I waved her on. If we made it difficult for Posey to see both of us at once, we might stand a chance of disarming her.
"Don't listen to her," Posey shouted. "They both want me dead."
Technicians and miners alike glanced back and forth between us. Some people had already slipped on and sealed their helmets, but most stood waiting, helmets in hand.
"Who are you going to believe?" Dupree demanded. "Me or Posey Zender?"
I shuffled to the left, adding distance between her and Dupree. Posey made a choice and turned with me. The crowd rotated with us, looking like a bunch of extras in some old Keystone comedy.
"What's going on?" someone asked.
"Posey killed Leatherman," I said.
"I thought that was an accident."
So everybody knew after all.
"It was Posey," Dupree said. "And an hour ago she tried to kill me and Kerrigan, drained our tanks, and left us to die afoot."
"I have it all on tape," I said. I didn't, but Posey didn't know that. Maybe it would stir the pot. It worked. She pointed the pistol straight up.
"Get your helmets on," she shouted. "I'm going to fire on the dome in 10 seconds.
"You'll die without a helmet, Posey."
"What's the difference? Dying here or rotting in some jail on Earth? I think I'll do it right now."
The airlock whooshed. The bubble quivered as it gulped the bit of vacuum brought in by the lock.
"All right, I did it," Kadar radioed. "I tried to shoot down the Mars ship. Chain me up and ship me back to Earth."
Everybody looked, even Posey, and Dupree jumped. She soared across the bubble, grabbed Posey's upstretched arm, and pushed it toward the floor. I barely heard the chuff of the pistol discharging. The flechette dart bit into the rubber, inches from my right boot. It remained intact. Posey and Dupree were buried in a mound of squirming, pressure-suited people, wrestling for a chance to get at Posey, and none of them very happy at the moment. I had never had so many impromptu, enthusiastic deputies. The point of light had passed to the north, but now, instead of falling back down the sky, it dropped more slowly. Soon it was almost stationary, receding on a line directly away from the viewers on the lunar surface. The dot went dim as the first engine burn finished. Odyssey had embarked on its long ellipse to the fourth planet from the sun. Posey lay pinned to the floor. I ducked to pick up the gun, then turned and gave Dupree a thumbs up.
"Hey," Jake Kadar pulled off his helmet. "What about me? Who's going to arrest me?"
January 1st, 1980. I sat at the base radio when Selene Station rose over the horizon. It had been 6 hours since Odyssey pulled out of orbit. By now, the crew would be busy mothballing the Nerva reactors, getting the craft into cruise mode. The Rockefeller staff was scattered about the base, in groups of one or two or more, celebrating the launch in the manner they preferred, including Dupree's excellent distillate. Except for two burly miners. They'd volunteered, and I deputized them to ride with the shackled Anderson, Zender, and Kadar on a truck ride up to Selene Station. Kadar had babbled before they left about how Anderson had convinced him that trying to shoot the ship down would get him charged and sent back to Earth for trial. Jake would get his wish. For the moment, I was alone. I fidgeted, wishing I didn't have to wait to talk to Garver. I decided we'd need some sort of relay satellites. This waiting for line of sight stuff grew old. There was a burp of static.
"Rockefeller, Selene Station,"
Congratulations, Tom, I said into the mic.
Good job to you too, Laura, he replied.
Yeah. I looked at the wall, thinking about the dark and the cold beyond. It didn't bother me so much anymore.
Thought you'd like to know, Garver said. Anderson's spilling his guts. He's a fink for TLC. They sent him up here to stage an incident to make the base staff look bad, turn public opinion against the workers. Kadar's a patsy, a desperate man, no more than that.
I nodded. I hoped Jake got off lightly.
That little scheme backfired, Garver said. There are already calls for a congressional investigation.
You think it'll do any good?
I think so. Senator Goldwater from Arizona said something about not binding the mouths of the kine who tread the grain.
That's good to hear, I said.
Get things cleaned up down there as soon as you can. I need some kind of report ASAP. I don't want to have today mucked up by a few pencil pushers crying for their paperwork.
Everything's under control. I'll scribble something and have it up to you by 1400.
I heard him sigh. He had to be as tired as I was, ready for an uninterrupted nap.
Another truck will be down next time around, he said. I can have you on a tug for LEO in 12 hours. Your priority, Laura, a small celebrity. The woman who saved the Mars mission and all that.
I closed my eyes. In my mind, I saw the shining star pass overhead, rising up from the stark rim of this new world toward another one and not falling down again. I smelled the ever-present dust and hint of ozone, considered the place around me that would kill me in a moment if I made a mistake. I thought of radiation and vacuum and the cold the most. And I recalled the way we all cheered Odyssey's departure.
Thanks, I said. I won't need it.
What's that?
I think I want to stay. Be here when the ship gets back. There's a lot of work to be done in the meantime. Lots of opportunity, getting ready for the second launch.
Someone else can do it.
I suppose.
But
Earth was far away and long ago. That the base staff voted to form a union. United Workers of Luna Local 1. They invited me to be president. I heard a grunt, then a soft chuckle.
What are your plans, Madam President?
Hey. Dupree stood at the open door, smiling and holding two glasses of red liquid. I sat up straight. Tom, I plan to have a taste of genuine moonshine. After that, I'll play it out by ear.
Save some for me, will you? He said.
Say again?
Save a glass for me. I'll see you in a couple of hours.
Say again? This time, the chuckle was full out loud.
If you're not coming up, I'm coming down. I can just catch that next truck if I hurry.
Why? I asked.
You might need a backup, someone older with some sense.
Are you serious?
I'm 66 years old, Laura. They've already told me I'll never ramrod another job, let alone one like this. I can go home to sit and rot. I'm not even sure I could get a consulting gig at some aerospace company. Like you said, there's opportunity down there. Besides, if I don't give it a shot, my old man's ghost will never stop bugging me.
Well, hell, come on down. Garver spoke again.
How does that old song go? You'll get pie in the sky when you die? Bullshit. I'm in the sky and I'm not dead yet. This could be a lot of fun.
You're crazier than I am, I said.
Downright moonstruck. Need a shop steward?
No, I said. We need a union president. If this is going to work, we need someone with more clout than me. Someone just like you.
What makes you think the crew would accept me?
Come on down and we'll make your case, I said.
Okay, I'll give it a go. But then what about you?
I smiled to myself. Every town needs a sheriff. In my mind's eye, I saw Garver nodding.
I like that notion, he said. For now, Celine Station out.
I slipped off the headset, thinking of how another old tune my mother used to sing got the message wrong. The best things in life aren't always free. But if I had my way, the moon would belong to everyone.